Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th day of September, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, here comes the news. While I read the news, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. Facebook had it roughest last week. Too bad. Many leaked documents, formed the backbone of a string of reports published in the Wall Street Journal. Together, the stories paint the picture of a company barely in control of its own creation. The revelations run the gamut. Facebook has created special rules for VIP that largely exempted 5.8 million users from moderation, forced troll farm content on 40% of America, created toxic conditions for teen girls, ignored cartels and human traffickers, and even undermined CEO Mark Zuckerberg's own desire to promote vaccination against COVID. Now, Facebook wants you to know it's sorry and that it's trying to do better. It's a stunning revelation for a multi-billion dollar company that counts 2 billion people as users. Facebook isn't the first company to have a cavalier approach to security, and as such, it didn't have to make the same mistakes. Early in Facebook's history, all it had to do was look at as far as one of its major shareholders, Microsoft. In the late 1990s and early, yes, Microsoft is a major shareholder in Facebook. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, Microsoft had its own issues with security, producing versions of Windows and Internet Information Server that were riddled with security holes. The company began to fix things after Bill Gates made security the company's top priority in his 2002 Trustworthy Computing memo. One result of that push was the Microsoft Security Development Lifecycle, which implores managers to make security everyone's business. Microsoft began publishing books about its approach in the mid-2000s. And it's hard to imagine that Facebook's engineers were unaware of them. But a security-first development program must have come with costs that Facebook was unwilling to bear, namely growth. Time and again, the company has been confronted with choices about whether to address a safety or security problem or prioritize growth. It has ignored privacy concerns by allowing business partners to access users' personal data. It killed a project to use artificial intelligence to tackle information on the platform. Today, Facebook is fracturing under the internal strife caused by growth at all costs. The leaks to the Wall Street Journal, said Alex Stamos, the company's former chief security officer, are the result of frustrations the safety and security people experience when they're overruled by growth and policy teams. For now, Facebook doesn't seem to have much incentive to change. Growth at all costs will probably continue until, of course, the safety and security problems become so large that they start harming growth and retention. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Facebook security is basically non-existent. Your choices are what's new, I don't use it much, I don't use it, but I must know my elf name, and other. So far we have 27 votes total. What's new is just ahead of I don't use it. And very few people say that I don't use it much, but I must know my elf name. Now, if you said other, or if you just want more to say about this, head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the left under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 25 September 21, Facebook security is basically non-existent, and you can...
Why should that be a surprise to anybody? Well, you can go searching for something, do a Google search, which, you know, you're not even in Facebook, but you go and do, say, a Google search for, pots and pans.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you come back to Facebook and you're starting to see all these ads and everything else or things relative to pots and pans.
Yep. Yep. And nobody minds, apparently. There are programs you can run. There's one called Facebook Fence. There's uBlock Origin, several others that will prevent Facebook from following you. There's one called Facebook Container. There's just a bunch of them out there. And those help. I do two things. I run uBlock Origin, Facebook Container, and Facebook Fence on a different browser. So I use one browser for almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I use an entirely different browser for Facebook. So it can follow whatever I do on that browser, but it can't jump browsers.
There you go.
So
yeah, we had a customer this week ask about, you know, I was talking about something the other day and suddenly I'm seeing ads for it.
Yep.
Is it listening to me all the time? Not exactly, but you were probably talking about with someone. They may have did a search for that thing and Facebook knows you were with them. And so it thinks you might have similar ideas and
yeah.
sends the same ad to you too.
Sharing the wealth.
And there's also a psychological effect, where you would have gotten that ad anyway, but
right.
because you were talking about it, it was in your mind, and you were it hit you that I was just talking about that.
Well, even just the, you know, the power of suggestion that, you know, you were talking to your friend about that, you too might be persuaded to look into that item or something like that or different.
That's exactly right.
And yep, there's always that outside chance.
Yep.
Because so many billions of people are using Facebook so much, especially yeah. on their phones, and it knows your location, it knows who you're near. When Apple instituted a ask permission for location and Bluetooth, and basically if an app wants to access things on your phone, Facebook started popping up and saying, Facebook, we'd like your Bluetooth. So what the heck does Facebook want Bluetooth for? No.
Right.
Facebook uses Bluetooth to see who else you're near.
Right.
That might have also have Facebook, so they can link the two of you together.
Right. And yep. and yes, and that explains why if the other person looked it up, you might get the ad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you were together. They looked it up.
Yep.
You must be interested too.
And you're associated with them yep. because you're probably in their contact list and right. everything else.
Right.
So yeah,
and even if you're not, there's something on Facebook called shadow profiles. So even if you don't have a Facebook account yourself, you still have a profile because of all your friends
right.
that have interacted with you. It goes into their profile to create a profile of you that you don't know about.
Right, and every phone, every computer, every laptop, every desktop, every tablet has a unique signature, and once they catch that signature, they know you. They know where you are and what you're on. Even if you log in as somebody else,
they
know, oh, that's the tablet that Dave Enright logs into all the time from. This is probably still Dave Enright.
Well, that's why, you know,
which is convenient when you want it to do that. You walk into your room and your watch unlocks your computer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's where people are so dumb. In a good way, I guess, sometimes, because they think they can send off messages here and there, and they're not going to get caught.
Right.
Folks, if you're typed into a computer, they can trace it back. Every hotspot or place that you go has a different address. It's just like your home address. You don't go, you know, it's not going to take you to your neighbor or anything else. It's your address. And no matter where you go, they all have different addresses.
Right.
And so some people will try to use a VPN to stop that. So then the police go to the VPN company instead of you. Then they subpoena the VPN company and say, who is using this address at this time?
Yep.
There are a couple of companies that say they don't keep that information. But there's laws saying you have to keep that information, so we're
right.
not sure who's what. But I've seen on cop shows, people will pass messages around in an email account by saving it as a draft.
Yep.
Thinking since they've never sent the message, there's no trail. But it's in your account. It's in your
it's
draft.
In your account. It's in,
yeah. Yes, well, there's a trail.
It's just like these terrorists that, you know, are hijacking different companies and that and asking for bitcoins and that. Don't think that they're getting away with it, folks. They know exactly who it is, where they live, where it's coming out of, because they can trace it. One of the biggest things, I got in a discussion with somebody. I believe they still do it. They used to have a contest every year.
Pwn to own.
Yeah.
A couple,
they would set up...
Several of them in different cities all around the world.
Yeah, sites, folks, that, you know, they would make this supposedly hack-proof. And what they would do is individuals would go in and try to hack it. And it was some big money.
The most recent patches, everything up to date. And they have different levels of contests. So if you can break in with no user interaction, that gains you more money than if a user had to click on a button that you put there.
Right.
And folks, well, they said, well, why would they want to do a stupid thing like that? You know, hack it. Encourage folks to do that. I says, because then they turn around and then offer those folks jobs.
And the companies fix the bugs. Right. So a lot of
part of the pwn to own is you have to tell them how you did it so they can fix that.
And sometimes, so there's an interesting argument on both sides. Sometimes the good guys will keep an exploit secret until pwn to own, so they can get the get the prize. But a lot of companies will have bug bounties. So if you turn in a bug before we'll get some money for it. And actually now finding bugs. Bounties are high enough that can be a full-time job now.
Yeah. And it is for a number of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've been listening to Security Now, and a recent Chrome attack at a pwn to own, someone showed a Chrome exploit, and apparently what they figured out what happened is when that exploit got patched, the bad guys looked at the Chromium commit library.
Right.
And found the regression test, which is run to make sure the patch doesn't cause any other problems and stays away, were able to build that into a new exploit, and were attacking Chrome differently, a fully patched Chrome within a day.
Right.
So some of the big guys are really smart, but there's new ransomware as a service, viruses as a service. So if you don't have any skill, you can buy someone else's exploit. The pipeline that got shut down, that was a ransomware as a service, and the service provider said in their terms of service, you're not supposed to attack government agencies because they don't want to get the government mad at them. Apparently, they didn't know this pipeline was owned by a government agency. Three or four steps removed.
Right.
And so they shut down, claiming someone broke into their account and stole all their money. So the bad guys will break into other bad guys' accounts. Although some of the security researchers say that was just their exit strategy, so they don't have to pay anybody anymore.
Yeah. Right. Covering their butt.
Right.
But they're out there, folks, and they know how to, track you.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going, stealth mode or, never going to be found out, you better rethink that.
And the typical movie and TV vision of a hacker, sitting in a dark basement typing away at a computer to break into things is almost never true. People break into your accounts all the time because you answer quizzes on Facebook.
That's exactly right.
You know, how far away from where you grew up do you live now? Well, now I've got two data points, and then they'll put another test. What was the street you grew up on? And
They
build your security questions so they can break into your account. So we almost want to say they didn't break into your account. You gave them the answers they needed.
That's right. It's not really breaking in if you give them a key.
Yeah.
So absolutely. It's a long and involved process to create a good exploit, but it's nothing to use one.
Yeah. And there's also
that's one of the things that I hear all the time. I don't have any information they want. They don't care. These are being put out by bots. Once they create the thing, they loosen a bot, and it goes and gets everybody. Mm-hmm. It does. They don't care.
And it's a level of anonymity.
Right.
They use your computer now to break into someone else's.
Yeah, they're using you as another scapegoat to go out and grab this. And you sit there, I didn't know that. You answered all these stupid questions, and
right.
you let them in the front door.
If you don't have a credit score, if you don't have a banking account, if you don't have a driver's license, if you don't have a social security number, then yes, they aren't interested in you.
Yeah.
If you have any of those things,
even if you have bad credit, someone will give you a low limit, high interest credit card.
Right.
And the bad guys just run it up.
If I can get your credit for $1,000, it's $1,000 I didn't have yesterday.
Yeah.
And you're liable. So I don't care. I don't know you. I don't care.
Yep. And then I say, this isn't me. And the credit card company writes it off. And then raises their rates for next year for everybody else.
Yeah. My students in class, I will always say, how many of you think you're not a target? And of course, hand goes up. And I'll say, you have something that is infinitely valuable to them. And they, tell me what it is. And they can't guess it. It's a clean credit record. They have zero bad credit. They're 20 years old.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if they can get enough information to open a credit account in your name, they can get a very high credit limit. Max it out in a day.
Hour.
Day. Yeah. I mean, I saw.
If they're lazy, a day.
Yeah.
What was it? 60 Minutes. They had a while back. This is a couple decades ago. And this is how long it's been going on.
Dave doesn't remember what he had for lunch, but he does remember two decades ago.
Yep. And sadly, it's true.
Trying to figure out what he had for lunch.
I didn't have lunch, so it was easy. So what they did is this one guy wound up having like four or five credit cards. And, they only had a $2,000 limit.
Right.
And he wound up going out to the black web just to prove folks thinking, oh, their credit cards are safe and all this. So he went out to the black web and he put one out there. And he said, that one, it took, because he's offering it to folks, and you pay him. It maybe took him 3-4 hours and they totally depleted that one.
Right.
Once they knew his ID and he turned around and put a couple more out there, the other four were depleted in less than a half hour.
Right. Once you know they're good, they know you're good.
Yep. They depleted those cards, and it was a company down in South Africa because they were having people buy the stuff and then shipping it down to them. And yeah.
Yep. You have things that are valuable. And as Steve said, even if you have nothing else, you have a computer.
Yeah.
And it's, you all right there?
No, I smell electronics burning.
That's probably not good.
And the thing's over there.
You're burning.
The one I know is burning is over there.
Steve's,
yes,
Steve.
It's my hub.
His hub is burning.
He's burning up stuff big time, though.
So there's no audio for the stream.
Oh, sorry.
Let me try this. I can do audio and skip one of the cameras.
Yeah, that's probably best. Skip mine. Now we got audio back?
I got to restart.
Yeah.
the program.
But yeah, so, folks, we've said this for a long time. Those stupid quizzes that folks are, well, fill this out. No, don't. Be smart enough to stay away from that stuff because what good does it do you? So you know your elf name. Is that going to get you anything? Other than, probably a lot of headaches because now your information's been stolen.
Right.
And, it's like, find something other than that to do.
Yep. It really is. Look, I get it. These are ego boost stuff. They boost your ego to know that, my star is in the ascendant and I'm, what does your birthday mean for your personality? Oh, you're sweet and generous. Nobody's going to say, you're an old hag and nobody likes you. You're never going to hear that. It's not. You just find some lovely things to say about you.
Ooh, and now we add your birthday to the security question.
Now we've added your birthday. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. And how many people use their birthday as a password?
Yeah. Or a lot of sites I've seen use your birthday as one of your security layers. So your birthday, then some questions.
Or what month you were born, yeah.
Yeah.
you know, trying to figure out, you know, especially the last year, genealogy, you know.
Right.
And they can find out.
As I tell people all the time, lie. Lie on your security questions. Just remember the lie. And that's what something like NPass is for.
Yep.
And then when you take a quiz, lie differently on the quiz. You're going to get the same answer. There's no point at which they're going to tell you you're a miserable human being and everyone hates you. You're always going to get you're a shining star in the firmament. So don't bother to tell the truth on those things. Nobody, honestly, nobody is going to get a real answer anyway. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we're chair dancing here at Sound Bites.
No, it was just Paul Conley.
Oh, yeah.
With the punk music.
In the background. Yeah, I like that. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. A code execution bug in Apple's Mac OS allows remote attackers to run arbitrary commands on your device. And the worst part is Apple hasn't fully patched it yet. Shortcut files that have the iNet lock or internet location extension are capable of embedding commands inside. The flaw impacts macOS Big Sur and prior versions. Originally, iNet lock files are shortcuts to an internet location, such as an RSS feed or a telnet location, and contain the server address and possibly a username and password for SSH and telnet connections. It can be created by typing a URL in a text editor and dragging the text to the desktop. Internet shortcuts are present in both Windows and Mac OS systems, but this specific bug adversely impacts Mac OS users, especially those who use a native email client like the Mail app. For example, opening an email that contains an iNet lock attachment via the Mail app will trigger a vulnerability without warning. The cause of the vulnerability is rather simple. An internet shortcut file typically contains a URL. But what happens if one includes a file :// URL? URLs beginning with :// rather than the commonly seen HTTP or HTTPS :// are used to retrieve files from within one's own computer system. Although Apple was notified of the flaw and starting with Big Sur blocks the inclusion of file URLs in its internet shortcuts, one can get around the block by simply changing the text case to even a single uppercase letter. Good security there.
Mac, file names are case specific.
Yep. Apple Mac, but then, okay.
Yeah.
Apple Mac users are warned to be cautious when opening .inet lock internet shortcuts, especially ones that come in via email attachments. So how often do you click on links in email? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
They issued a security patch 2 days ago to fix another problem, so I expect to see another one pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
Yeah.
And
part of the problem is Apple only supports the current OS and two versions old, which is a little better than Microsoft.
Right.
So they're still patching Catalina and Mojave. But now that Monterey is out, we're afraid they're going to drop Mojave. So you got to have Catalina or better to still get patches.
Right. So Catalina,
Big Sur,
and
Monterey.
That's still reasonable. I mean, you know.
Three fun. Back.
Yeah.
Come on.
They got to pay those employees, you know, and to have them still supporting. And it's the same with Windows. You know, I mean, it's only fair to those companies. You know, how long do they got to, you know, keep those people working on an old system? Update.
I had one the other day that Microsoft, the Windows kept putting up all these messages about you got to update, your support has ended. They were running Windows 10, but 1803.
Right.
Which is only 3 years old.
Oh, I had one person call me having issues. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
XP.
Wow. Yeah, they're having issues.
And they were wondering why. I says, forget it.
Yeah.
I says, go get a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. And then I told them, you know, what a Chromebook could do. And that's, well, I'll have to look into that.
The reality is that when you have a 10 or 12 or 15 or 20-year-old machine, you aren't going to get updates. You aren't going to get support. You aren't going to get service.
You're going to get hacked.
Well, and that almost doesn't matter to people because the game they run still works.
Right.
But yep. Now suddenly the program doesn't work on your new OS and you're fighting it with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or the new OS doesn't work. Or
Yeah.
You know, there's something wrong with my machine. How can I fix it? You can buy a new machine.
Well, that's what he was...
Take a sledgehammer to this one and get a new machine. That's really all there is left.
Well, he was trying to update some stuff, and it wasn't working. I go, it's not good. It's not supported. Right. Hello, that's so old. Forget it.
Right. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, but he goes, but I still like it. Like Steve said, you know, there's a few things that he likes doing with it. And
Build
a bridge. Get over it.
Yeah. And 99% of everything you do now can be done... With the new machine.
Just a different program.
It just may look a little differently.
I run my business on a database that hasn't been updated in 11 years. A database program that hasn't been updated in 11 years. Well, look, it's your business. Yeah. You can do what you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, if it were my business, I'd spend a couple of bucks and get a new program.
Invent a time machine. Go back 10 years and tell your past self to update the stupid thing.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Or, you know, they went out of business 10 years ago. The database manufacturer went out of business 10 years ago. That would have been exactly the right time to move to another database.
You think?
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Reed from Chi Lai, New York. Hi, Reed. Tell me you don't have an XP machine with a problem.
Oh, not at all, no. Yeah, Windows 10.
Okay, good.
Give you a little background. My wife bought a new laptop, and the Microsoft Office apparently was 30 days for free, and now it's into what they call a Word unlicensed product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Apparently it's free. Well, she was typing fervently, making a document, and didn't realize the battery on the laptop was going down, and finally just shut off because it was dead. And it looks like she lost her whole document. And I was reading that the Microsoft Word has auto backup every 10 minutes. It automatically backs up your work. And I can't seem to find that if it's available on the free version.
Well, there is no free version of Word.
Right.
You pay for it, or you can't save your files.
The 30-day, if they were doing it and they were still within the 30 days, it'll let you create stuff and save it.
It's called auto-save, and it basically does a save every few minutes. But you should all get in the habit of hitting Control S every now and then just to save your documents. But it's generally done automatically, and the next time you open that file, it says, "Do you want to recover from the auto-saved document?"
You can see where Word is auto-saving things. So what you do is you launch Word, click File, select Options. And then you'll see a whole bunch of options on the left-hand side. One of the choices will be save. Click on that. If save auto recover information, if that option is selected, you can choose the amount of time, 10 minutes, 1 minute, whatever it is. And you can set an auto recover file location. So if save auto recovery information is turned on, it'll tell you how often it saves it and where.
And autosave can be turned off, so you got to hope it was turned on to have this information to begin with.
Right.
Now, do you plan on continuing using Office? Or?
I believe she is, yes.
So, yeah, you can pay $150 for the license for Office, or there's a $99 per year subscription. Every year, forever, basically.
Right.
Or you can switch to a different program, like LibreOffice, which is completely free and does everything Microsoft Office does.
And even reads and writes Microsoft files.
Hmm. I've heard of that. I've never tried it.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt to try it because it's free.
Yeah. Doesn't cost you anything. And I guarantee you, she can create a document in LibreOffice, save it as a Word document, send it to anybody else in the world, and they'll all think that she created it in Microsoft Word.
Wow. Oh, definitely, I'd try that.
I used to do that at RIT. RIT, I was in the College of Business. Of course, they're all about Word. But I was using LibreOffice, and nobody knew, ever.
And it has a spreadsheet program built into it, a presentation program. It's a whole package,
database,
just like Office.
Yeah,
just like Office. And it's free.
Well, as soon as I'm finished with you, I'll download it and take it from there.
There you go.
Excellent.
You'll be the hero.
All right. Well, thank you so
much. One question, though, for you there, Reed. Did she happen to save it at all that you know of? Did she name the document?
I gave her a thumb drive, and she was trying to save it, and there was no, she said there was no listing for the thumb drive. She didn't know where it would save. So
all right, so what you might want to do, by default, Microsoft Word saves all the documents under that username under documents. So if you go into, say, Windows Explorer, and if she remembers the name of the file, up in the upper right-hand corner, you can do a search and start typing part of that letter's title, whatever she was using it to save it as, and see if it can search the hard drive and find it.
I'll do that.
And when you go to download LibreOffice, make sure you're doing it at LibreOffice.org. And to make sure you get the real one.
Yeah, there's some fake ones out there because it's such a good program.
Right.
Oh, that's good to know. All right.
And Libra is spelled L-I-B-R-E. So it's LibreOffice, all one word.
Boy, it's always the details that get you, isn't it?
Always is.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what we're here for.
All right. Have a good one.
You too, sir. Thanks.
I always still have to convince my wife to hit save every now and then. Don't type the 10-page report. Hit print, and then it crashes before the pages come out of the paper.
I set my autosave to 1 minute.
Yeah.
Which is the smallest increment you can set it to. And that way, at the most, I lose a minute.
Well, one of the things she does, when she was secretary for the computer club, she'll take the minutes, last month's minutes, open that same file and make changes and then do a save as. So she can't do an autosave or she loses the last one. So I'm trying to say duplicate it first, name it, change the name, then make your changes.
Rename it to the current month. And then make all the
save
changes
as
and save
this
it.
Month, and then make your changes.
Her solution was to stop being secretary.
That's a solution.
It's actually now she's president. So
there you go. That's
So there's less work involved.
Yes, there is. President's job is basically to say that's a good idea. You're in charge.
Yep. And everyone else pretty much figures out that you never volunteer any ideas because you'll be put in charge of that idea.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, folks, if you have not tried LibreOffice, it is completely free. It is 99% Microsoft Office. Yes, there will be some people who need specialized things. For example, if you're a lawyer, there are add-ons for Microsoft Office that may not be available for LibreOffice.
Different boilerplates.
Right. And that's possible. Boilerplates will work. You can use the same templates.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are add-ons that will format it in a certain way, add the proper line numbers for law devices, files, whatever it's called, and so you can find things that don't work for LibreOffice, but they're few and far between. Yeah. And for the average user, believe me, when you have something as powerful as Microsoft Office, but is also free, why would you not at least give it a try? Yep. I mean, it's free. You know,
and you can call it Microsoft if you want to.
Sure you can. Sure you can.
I need to open my Microsoft.
Right.
Microsoft what?
Right. All right. You know what? That's not going to work. That is. Okay. Let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hey, guys. Happy Saturday.
You too.
I have a Pixel 3, and my camera doesn't do QR scanning anymore. It used to work perfect, and all of a sudden it stopped, and I've been Google searching it, and everything I've tried, nothing works.
Are you using the Lens program?
Well, I'm not, and I never did before.
Right.
But when I do try it with the Lens program, it does work. I have to actually open a camera, then go to the Lens, and then do it that way.
That's how it works now. They made a change.
Okay, figures.
Sorry.
Two-step process now instead of one.
Yes, exactly. Why would they make it easier for you? What's wrong with you?
All right. Okay, well, thanks. And at least I know that's what the problem is.
Yeah, that's what they did. Sorry.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Great work, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
One of the things I get annoyed at on my iPhone is it will read the codes, but it turns the zoom off when you're trying to read a code. And some of the codes I have to read are so tiny.
Yeah.
So I end up taking a zoomed picture of it and then using another device. I don't want to print it. Using another device to scan the zoomed picture on the first device.
Right. Well, that's part of the reason Google did what they did. Is that many times if you want to take a picture of something, Lens would pop up because it interpreted something or it actually had a QR code on it. Let's say you wanted to take a picture of a label on the back of your computer and it had a QR code as well.
Yep.
It would override the picture function
and
for the QR code
the
function. And people didn't want that. And many, many, many people complained.
Mm-hmm.
So they made that change to make Lens a separate
which makes sense.
And almost nobody actually complains about Lens being a separate feature now. So they did it. They did the right thing. You know, mm-hmm. they're helping the majority.
Yeah.
You run into folks like Joe who now have to do a two-step in order to... But two steps are fun. They're a good dance, so you might as well enjoy yourself while you're doing it.
For the number of times that you might do it?
Well, it depends on the person, but yes, absolutely.
It's not like you're doing it every 5 minutes.
Right. The average person, the majority of people, don't do it very often. And so now it's just a separate little step.
I found a feature Apple added a few years ago that I never noticed before. When I'm using my phone to scan a barcode on parts, so we always have to scan the barcode parts, I would then have to open my database program on the phone, paste it in, and it's hard to do on the phone. Well, Apple has this thing called Universal Clipboard.
Yeah.
So I copy on my phone and paste on my computer.
Nice.
And it does.
Oh, cool.
Very nice.
And I can't believe all these years I forgot that was in there. Well, because now, as a security feature, they started putting a little flag up. So when I copy something out of, say, Safari, the browser, and paste it into Notes, a little message comes up and says, Safari, paste it into Notes. So you know what happened. And if it wasn't you doing it, there's something going on there.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I started seeing that. And, well, how about I paste over here? And that worked.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Well, that's the thing. They add so many features, and we've said it for years.
They highlight the big features on all the notes, but nowhere is a list of the 1,000 little features they changed.
You know, all the computers, whether it's Mac or PC, have so many features, and I can guarantee you over 75% of the folks out there don't use 50% of them.
Right.
And that's
but it's a shifting difference. So this group of people will use this feature and this group of people won't until one of them sees how to, oh my gosh, that's great. I've been wanting to do that.
Yep. Well, just to make the Android people happy, you can do a similar thing on Android, but it takes an app because Apple owns both the operating systems and Google doesn't.
Well, does it work with Chrome, Android phone and Chrome computer?
I haven't tried it. Well,
might.
there is a thing called Tote. So maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. What? And there's a phone hub on Chrome, the Chrome OS. So I don't know. But you can use Push Bullet or Chrono or Clipboard with only the I and the only vowel is the I in Clip. So Clipboard. Universal Clipboard, and there are half a dozen others. So you can do it. It just takes an extra product because Google doesn't own both sides.
Speaking of teaching folks different things, I was in a month ago now. I had to order a new dishwasher. So I went into happened to be Home Depot. My friend was working there, and we were trying to see different dishwashers. Well, he's writing down all these, numbers for the different models. I go, wait a minute, here, let me show you something. So we pulled up one that I was interested in. I just selected it, the long ID number. Went over to the other, we switched over to the other screen. I went into the ordering part where it was blank and just did, a paste. He goes, how'd you do that? It's been there for decades.
What I like is when I see a feature like this one I didn't know before. And,
right.
And then that other person gets to teach the guru.
Yeah, right.
You usually know everything. Well, you can't know everything. Someone else knows something.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
There is a flag you can set to do that on Chrome.
What, for copy and paste?
Yeah. Between Android.
Control C, Control V.
Right.
I just, from my old DOS days, I mean, that was the whole thing. Control Z to undo.
Yep. Cut, copy, paste. So the X for cut, the C for copy kind of makes sense. The V is paste because it's an arrow pointing down.
Yep.
And then the Z was undo.
Yep.
Because that's
and you could do it. You could keep doing the Control Z, Control Z, and it would take you back, I think, what was it, up to 5 or 6 undos?
That was one thing. The Mac only had one copy, but undo would work back until like the last save or something, the last other command you hit.
Mm. Okay.
So there was for a while, there were a lot of multi-clips, so you could have multiple clipboards to copy and paste things from.
Right. And that's, don't I have that on, maybe I got that on Linux somewhere. Anyway, yeah, so there's lots of things that you can do like that. It just takes
Well, I used to like with the old Unix. You could sit there and be typing commands and using the up and down arrow key, go back to, the previous commands that you had typed.
Right.
Make a change, hit enter, boom, it would execute it. Go up or down again, and saved quite a bit of typing.
So I tend to forget when I'm typing commands at the Linux command line. I tend to forget to put the sudo at the beginning if I'm doing a root command. That's
So I'll type
the thing that says you have to be root to do this. Well, what I learned is you can type sudo, S-U-D-O, space, 2 exclamation points.
Ooh.
And it runs the previous command with sudo.
What I usually do is type is up arrow, which recalls your previous command.
Yep, right.
And then home to jump to the front, right. And then type sudo.
Yes, you can do it that way too. But I learned you can use sudo, bang bang, and it works.
Cool.
So that's pretty nice.
Yeah, that saves some time.
Yeah,
because I do the same thing, And,
or what it should do is you must be sudo to run this command. Do you want to be sudo? Type your password.
If from the command line, they often don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it would be nice if they did. I have to say that I was noticing today's birthdays.
Mark Hamill, I think, I just saw. Yeah.
Mark Hamill, Christopher Reeve, of course, Will Smith.
Today's Google Doodle.
Michael Douglas. But today, Shel Silverstein. Today's the birthday of Juliet Prowse, Cheryl Teagues, Heather Locklear, and Catherine Zeta-Jones. That's some good genetics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. A day like this. Yeah, but it's also Shel Silverstein, his birthday, and William Faulkner. So good genes there, too. Good writer genes there. And some baseball players and some other people.
Yeah, because now we're into fall.
It's fall. It's fall. Once you're retired, these seasons don't matter nearly as much. You think, I've got to go back to school or whatever. But, once you're out of school, even, when you're working or whatever, it's another day. Maybe a little harder to drive in the snow, but in ice. but it's still, it's just another day. All right, that's it. The first hour of this show is in the history books, but go along with us in a little ride into the near future, because we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, he must be talking about sound bites. And indeed I am. We're going to be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Sound bites right here on the truly great, and truly grateful to you, because with your generous support, we have been able to stay on the air for a very long time. It's Jazz 90.1. Take a bio break. We'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901JAZZ.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Steve did from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope you're doing well.
We are. You?
I'm hanging in there.
Good.
Hanging in there. Last night I was working remotely on a friend's computer, and one of the things he complained about was a Windows update warning. And when I went to look at it, a little bit of background. He is running both Windows XP Pro and Windows 365. But he's been doing this for 3 years, at least. He now has a Office XP Service Pack 3 waiting for you to review license and then do it. So I stepped through it, but it won't download. Completely.
It's probably been removed from Microsoft servers.
Yeah.
It won't go away. It's still standing, sitting up there.
Because it needs to be installed.
Right. You're stuck in the catch-22 of XP internally knows that this needs to be updated. Microsoft externally removed the file 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There's no...
And no mechanism to turn it off.
Right.
You might be able to find that service pack for download somewhere else.
And then assuming you trust it.
I've seen a lot of universities will have these service packs available for their students. And you can usually trust them.
So when I did try to download, it looked like it was downloading, then said it failed?
Yeah, because it's by looking like it's downloading, it's searching for it.
Okay.
And then... it's not there, so it fails.
It times out trying to find it.
So one of the things, why after 3 years is this suddenly here?
It's because it's Microsoft.
Okay.
There's no other answer.
Yeah,
there's
no rhyme or reason.
That explains it all. It's Microsoft.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I'm looking on Microsoft's website now, and it does seem to be XP Service Pack 3 is still available. And I hit download, and it starts downloading.
Yeah, it starts to download. It looks like it's starting to download.
Okay, it downloads a stub, 1.6 megs.
Yeah, that's not it.
Then you run that. Well, you run the stub, and it downloads the rest of it, which is probably missing.
Right.
Yep.
Because it does say it, you know, partway through the download, it says, okay, download failed.
Yeah.
Right. You might try downloading the stub on another machine. The problem is it probably will download it and then automatically run it. So that's what you're getting. The stub downloads, and the actual install fails.
Okay.
Look, we just said this in the last hour. XP is done. Microsoft has stopped supporting it.
Stick a fork in it.
Which is part of the reason I was surprised it suddenly showed up.
Right.
It's probably been trying to show up for years.
Just a timing issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So one more quick question. The reason he's running XP is because he hates the new ribbons and all that other stuff.
Turn them off.
Is there a GUI he can put over 365 to make it look like it's XP?
Don't know of one.
But you can turn the ribbons off.
You should be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's used to he knows where everything is in XP. Doesn't know where things are now.
It's a little bit of learning.
Well, you can turn off the ribbon, but you still have the regular menu items, right?
Right.
Yeah, your start menu is going to look a little bit differently. You get extra icons for that program rather than just the name.
Right.
Okay. Well,
but there's no fix for this.
Okay. I mean, they used to have GUIs that you could put over these things, but it doesn't look like they got one for this.
Yeah, not that I know of.
Yep.
I just found Windows XP Service Pack 3 at Major Geeks, and it looks like it's still available on their site.
I do like Major Geeks, too.
32-bit or 64-bit, so you got to make sure you get the right one.
Okay. Excellent.
And so that was released April 2008, so that's probably...
XP was 64-bit? I don't think so.
There was...
This is Office.
No, I'm doing Windows XP.
Yeah, Windows XP was only 32-bit.
Yeah, but this is Office Pro.
Yeah, but no, I'm talking about...
Oh, are you talking about Windows Update or Office Update?
Office Update.
I'm sorry, I'm talking about Windows Update.
Oh, we were all talking about Windows Update.
I thought I said Office, I may not have.
No, you didn't say Office.
No, you said Windows.
Okay, well then I apologize, but I get to talk to you guys longer.
There you go.
An Office Pro.
What year of Office Pro?
Doesn't say.
Oh, so the non-yeared one. So it's the same answer. They've removed the downloads.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
So when did they stop putting... There was an Office 2000, so it must have been before 2000 where it didn't have a year number.
Yep.
2000, 2003... It was always like 1 year off from the Mac. It was 2003 for Windows, 2004 for Mac. And then it was 7 for Windows and 8 for Mac.
Right.
Now they went to 2019 for both, but we hear rumors about 2022 coming this fall.
Okay.
So Office with no number, no year number after it is probably so old that the downloads are gone.
Yeah, look, Windows XP is 29 years old, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To know, 21 years old. 20 years old. It's 2001.
Damn good.
2021.
Yeah.
20 years old.
Some people just don't want to change.
Oh, I know.
I get that, but they have to understand that there will be problems when they do not. And that's,
And they have to live with those problems.
I'm sorry, but oh well. There are people who still want to drive on the left-hand side of the road in America. They can't. It just is what it is.
Okay. All right.
I wish there were a different answer, but there is not. It is what it is.
You confirmed what I said, but I told them I'd check with the experts.
Well, thank you.
But I couldn't find them, so I talked to you.
That's exactly right. That is exactly it.
So switch them to LibreOffice so you don't have to pay for Microsoft Office.
There you go. There you go. All right. Thank you. You guys have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah, actually, LibreOffice is closer...
To the older Windows.
To the old Office.
Yeah.
Than the new offices. So
it doesn't cost them anything. Install it and at least try it.
That's right. You may find, because it doesn't need a ribbon and it doesn't do any of that other stuff, you may find it's actually
might work
much
better.
Closer for you than the new versions of Office.
And it will work better under XP.
And it will work better under XP. That is exactly
right. Especially since he's trying to use that newer version of Office on an ancient operating system.
He's trying to see if LibreOffice still supports XP.
Well, that's a good question.
There's the download button.
That's a very good question.
I'll bet you they do.
We'll say it one more time. When you're trying to run a 20-year-old operating system, you may find that things don't work.
even on a 10-year-old system, people with Windows 7.
Right. Right.
I mean, XP is older than Windows 7. And Windows 7 has even been
twice as old as Windows 7.
Even the earlier versions of Windows 10 are now unsupported. You need to have run updates since then.
Right.
They should have had Windows 10 and 11 along the way, but they just kept updating and calling it Windows 10.
Right. Now we're at, I think, 20H.
Yeah, 20H2. There was a guy a few years ago that said Windows 10 will be the last Windows.
Right.
Apparently, because now Windows 11 is coming out, that guy didn't count. So there's a story going around. Paul and Mary Jo Foley were talking about it on Windows Weekly, that he was like a lower peon, so the thought at the time was that they would just call it Windows and would have a sub number or a year number, you know, Windows 2021, 2022. But now that Windows 11 is coming out, he really didn't count.
Right. Well, the way I've heard it is that they were going to go to Windows on the cloud.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is now Windows 365.
Windows 365. The problem is it wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than not have any update at all, they went with Windows 11, which isn't everything they wanted for Windows 365 exactly, but is you know, up from Windows 10. And they wanted to bring something out that would do trusted platform modules and all that stuff. So there's a lot of that. Listen, folks, don't forget, tomorrow night at 9 p.m., if you go to soundbites.org/lounge, you will find a link at 9 p.m. to the Soundbites Lounge. Shocking, I know. And you can join us in a Mastermind Lounge room to discuss computer stuff, just like we're doing here, with or without your camera, with or without your microphone. You can... We can see you or not. You can talk or not. You can type or not, whatever you want to do. But we'll be there from 9 to 10. It works on desktops and laptops and tablets and phones and everything. So you can join us. We don't have the 40-minute limit of Zoom. So it's all there, and you can join us 9 p.m. tomorrow night. Just go to soundbites.org/lounge. And at 9 p.m., do a refresh, and you'll see the link magically pop up. In the meantime, we will go to the phones, and that's James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
Oh, hi. I have a question for you. I'm on my laptop watching something on YouTube live. Is there a way to watch that later, like tape it right on the laptop, you know, record it? Or is there a program for that? I don't know.
There are a...
there are a couple.
Yes and no.
And so the content creator has to allow downloading.
Right.
And if they don't, then the short answer is no. But what often happens is there are plugins you can get for Firefox and Chrome that will capture that live stream until YouTube figures out what they're doing and changes the algorithms so that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
But right. Most YouTube live videos are available for automatic replay afterwards. I know ours is.
Right.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll try that because, for example, today there's that global concert on.
Right.
It's on live now on YouTube. And I know certain things would be on later recorded. But I was just curious. It popped into my head. On, like, anything, whether it be YouTube or something else, if you're watching something... you just answered the question. There is a way to record it and look at it later.
So there's two things. There are programs that will let you download YouTube videos, but they are not streams.
Okay. Because
streams are live. There is, however, a program called Total Recorder.
Mm-hmm.
At TotalRecorder.com. I don't know how much it costs now, but it used to be $15. I'm waiting for it to refresh. And tell me, and it doesn't seem to, and I don't know why.
I will look that up, look at my other laptop later, TotalRecorder.com, and see what it shows for me as far as the rules and regulations.
I remember trying a screen capture program to record a video, and it just came out as a black square. It didn't record the video. It recorded everything around the video, but not the video itself.
Right. Total Recorder does have a test version, I believe, so you can use it free for 10 days or whatever the number is. But you can buy it for $18. The professional edition, the video edition, there's different division. There's different visions, versions. So you can take a look at what each version has to offer. Mm-hmm. And there's a feature comparison chart that will show you the
YouTube,
various.
YouTube will do it. Or not YouTube. Yeah, VLC will capture YouTube.
But again, the live stream?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, there's a
network. VLC does everything. Yeah, I keep forgetting that.
There's a network stream command that opens a stream.
Oh, wow. Network stream command. Well, you've given me some great advice, and I am going to research that while I'm watching it on my other laptop and see what the Total Recorder and the VLC both have to offer. Thank you so much. You guys are excellent.
Thanks. Have fun.
You have a great day.
You too. I keep forgetting all the things that VLC does.
I should try it right now. Might be pushing my computer too much. I'm sending the stream out. Should I try to and I'm recording locally.
I wouldn't if I were you, but that's you. You
try
do
to
what you want.
Record it back in again later, yeah.
VLC is a free program. Yep. It is open source. It is cross-platform, so it runs on dang near everything, including Android and Linux and iOS and Windows, everything, and Mac OS, pretty much everything. And so once you have it, there's all kinds of other things you can do with it. So you might want to check that out. It's at videoland.org, I think.
Yeah,
videoland.org. It is a free download. If you're a Linux user, it's in your distribution. If you're an Android or iOS user, it's in the App Store. So you can pretty much get hold of it any way you like. All right, to the phones again. I think this is the same Joe we had before from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks again. I wanted to ask you, is it possible to run an Android app on a Chromebook? I bought it from like Amazon and download it through the Amazon app.
Yeah. Yes. You can run, it depends on the version of Chromebook you have.
Okay.
But most of the modern Chromebooks, modern Chromebooks will run Android apps. You can install them right from the App Store. I know you can do it from the Google Store.
Right.
I don't know if you can do it from the Amazon Store, but generally, whatever you find in one, you can find in the other.
Okay, because I've got a Google account as far as Gmail, but I don't have for credit cards purchasing, but I do have it through Amazon.
Well, a lot of them in the Google Store are free.
Well, this is a special program that I had to purchase.
Okay, well, it certainly can't hurt to give it a try, but I can't promise, as I've never tried that myself.
Okay, all right, great.
Give it a shot.
I will. Thank you.
Getting it into the Chromebook might be the trickier part, and that's where the store comes in.
Yeah, right. But what you do is you go into settings and select Android and search for Android, and you'll see a whole bunch of stuff that you can do Android things. I run a number of Android apps in my Chromebook. I'm running NPass and the Google Play Store and Google Keep and a bunch of other things. In fact, I think I'm also running Google Photos through that. Excuse me. So you can very easily add Android things to your Chromebook and run them without a problem. In fact, I've said this before. A friend of mine had a Brother printer, an all-in-one, and he has a Chrome box, and he wanted to be able to scan to his Chromebox. Well, there's no native app At the time, at least, there was no native app for Chrome, but there is an Android app, and it works perfectly.
For scanning.
For scanning. For everything. For printing, for scanning, for everything. So he uses that, and it works perfectly. So, yes, you can run Android apps on almost every Chromebook. Obviously, the very old, very inexpensive ones with very little RAM have a problem running more than one at a time, but you should be able to run them and do what you want without a problem.
I've been playing with BlueStax, which is an Android emulator for Mac and Windows to let you run Android apps. But I've been seeing the Mac version is significantly inferior to the Windows version. So there's a few. I'm trying to get one of my security cameras on feeds on my computer instead of my iPad, so I don't have to keep the iPad on and charged all the time.
Sure.
But it doesn't like that camera for some reason. Or that I load that app and it doesn't work, but the iPad sitting right next to my computer works fine.
I keep wanting to swap out my I've got a camera that looks out my front window, but it only runs on an app, and I really want one that has its own built-in little system that I can just
web server built into it.
So I'm looking.
They generally cost a little more.
Cost a little more. Yeah.
Especially this is a Wyzecam I bought for $20.
That's what I have.
Well, there is a IP firmware you can flash it with to switch it to an IP camera, and then you can run any IP. ONVID compatible viewer, and it has its own public IP address that you can map through your router.
Oh, interesting. So,
yeah, because I got one that sits there and it ties into my system.
Yep.
And there's an app on my phone.
Right, but you can't watch it on your computer. You have to use your phone.
Yeah, I don't want to use my phone.
No, I wind up. It's got a memory card in it, so you can take the memory card out.
Yeah,
view anything
real time.
Yeah, you can't watch the live video on your computer.
No, I believe you got to do it on.
So yeah.
I only do it on my phone.
It's a firmware from Wyze to switch it into an IP camera, and they also had one to switch it into a USB webcam during the whole webcam shortages during COVID. Several of the internet camera companies released patches to let you turn your internet cam into a webcam.
And it's from Wyze.
From Wyze, yeah.
That would be important.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. I will look into that. That is now in Google Keep, which, by the way, is an Android app running perfectly well on my Chromebook.
Love Keep. I've used that for so long.
I do everything in Keep now.
Yeah, I mean, notes. In fact, one of the first things I ever did, which saves me countless time is all my meds that I have to take. You go to the doctor's office and they want to know what you're up to date with.
Yep.
All I do is open up my phone, go over to Keeps. There's the list. I go, here you go. Check it.
Yep.
And they can sit there and verify. This is everything I take. I keep that up to date. That way I don't have to remember 16, ways from Sunday, how milligrams and what I'm taking this in the morning and what I'm taking in the afternoon.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to each other. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I just was checking. I realized they had not plugged in my Chromebook, so I checked to see how much time I had left. It wasn't full when I opened it up this morning. I've still got, I'm afraid I've only got 5.5 hours left.
Oh.
Is that all? That's terrible. All right, don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Bill did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Bill, what's up?
Hi, Nick. I got a question on a Chromebox, an older one I have.
Yeah.
It's a Panther is the processor, is the version of Chrome that runs in it. It's an i3 processor, and it's got 4 gigabytes of RAM, and it doesn't update anymore, obviously, because, you know, being Panther, I think that was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It was done. So it's still at like 76, I believe, is the main number of the updates on Chrome. So I was looking at possibly putting a Linux distro on it. And I was going through, you know, the YouTube, the usual thing, checking on how to do it. And it looked pretty straightforward, but it seems that I have a glitch on mine anyway, and I don't know if you can give me any light on it. When I push this little reset button that's above the lock that's next to your, the card reader.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a little reset button. When you push that with the paperclip, I actually watched it from the, you know, taking the cover off. It pushes in, and it causes the screen to go blank like it's supposed to, but then nothing happens. It just stays blank. And I've, you know, held it in. I've let go of it. I've done all these different things. According to all the YouTubes, they show it'll actually bring up a screen saying that you've got a no operating system, and then you push Control D, and you know, and it brings you in developer mode, and then it's, you go through various steps to where you can actually install a distro, you know, because you have to change the BIOS in order to do that.
Right.
Is it worth me messing around with it anymore if it seems to be getting stuck at that? It still does run Chrome, but it's Panther, you know, which doesn't get any updates, and it's very limited on what I can do. And like, you can't really do a lot anymore because some of the apps are, you know, you go to the various websites, you can't even download them because you don't have enough updated processor capability, you know. My question is two things. First of all, do you know a workaround it? To get it to happen, to so I can complete the upgrade and change the BIOS and make this a usable, nice little. It's one of those little nooks, you know.
Right.
It would be handy, but if not, I can just leave it Chrome. If there's any other thing that I can do that you can think of other than just leaving it Chrome and being very limited.
It sounds like the micro switch in there isn't making, you know, it's making like, it's like pushing a, you know, a reset button in halfway.
Yeah.
It's not the full reset. It's only doing it a little bit just to blank the screen out.
We've seen that sometimes where the plastic button on the outside pushes the real button on the inside, and that real button is kind of like bent back on its posts. And
yeah,
so it's not making a full connection. If you can take the enclosure apart to get to see the inside of it, that may help.
I can do that. Because I was thinking, and before my next thought, before I thinking of calling you guys, was to take the enclosure apart, and I take a piece of plastic, I got like a plastic pair of pliers, and I could push them, well, I shouldn't say pliers, tweezers.
Yep.
I can push that button in without going through the case. That way I'd be right up against
it. Yeah, you'll see whether it's making the, whether it's actually, you know, making the full contact. Because like we were saying, you're probably like pushing it, but it's not making the full contact to do a complete reset.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because a paperclip really only pushes right in the center.
Yeah, and I wouldn't use the paperclip.
Yeah, it starts to dig a little hole.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it could, if that happens to slip and hit other components in there,
Not short good. Stuff out.
Yeah.
Oh, and then nothing will work.
Right. You got it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like I have the thought option is just to continue along safely, and if it doesn't materialize any kind of going to where it says it needs the operating system to be verified and all that, that means I'm stuck at just using Chrome and use it as long as it's useful, right?
That's exactly the way it works.
And I'll just recycle it from there. It's a beautiful little system. It would be great to have a different distro in it, but what are you going to do?
It, yeah, of course. No, I get it.
Is what it is, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Well, I appreciate you guys being there and giving me a little bit of guidance when need be. Usually I'm pretty good. I learned a lot from you guys in the past.
Thank you. We love to hear that. Thanks.
And you guys have a great show, and I appreciate your support.
Thanks. We appreciate you listening. Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. Yeah, it's Chrome boxes are just a Chromebook in a box, and you add your own keyboard and mouse and monitor.
A lot of times you plug it to your television as a media streamer.
Right. But like all Chrome devices, they have a lifespan, and once you reach the end of life, they won't update anymore. They're still entirely useful. You can still do all kinds of things with them. You just can't update to newer stuff. And if you want the newer stuff, then you get a newer box.
And you don't get the security updates and patches, you know, just like any Windows or Mac OS getting out of date.
Right. There still aren't any reproducible viruses or malware for them. So that's less important than on other machines, but still not unimportant.
Yeah, we've had enough of our customers getting tricked by the fake messages.
It's the fake messages that do you in. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Rochester, New York. What's up, Doug?
Hey, guys. Well, I do have a question, but, boy, when I heard you guys all saying, because it's Microsoft, you know.
Yeah.
Since 1992, I felt I've been taken advantage of by that company. But, and my question is, and I'm going to make it very concise. Sadly, I'm almost 60, so my skills in the computer world are a little whatever. But when I got my first iPhone, and I figured I'd try to send an email, but the laptop was spiraling up. Could I buy a Macintosh or whatever Apple laptop that does Microsoft Word? And this could be such a low-level question that I'm bringing the whole show down. But, I just don't want to buy another Microsoft anything ever again. And I'm going to do like this because I want to hear, you know, that's it. And if you guys don't want to answer this, or at least.
No, we're happy to answer this. You can buy any Mac laptop. Yeah. Will run.
Any Mac.
There is a.
Period.
Mac, period, whether it's a laptop or a desktop. Will run Microsoft Word, but as we've been saying in this show, they will also run LibreOffice.
Or with the Macs, they come with their own suite from Apple.
Wait a minute, just one step back. Yeah. Get a Chromebook and you use Office.
Yeah, Google Office,
Well, okay. And I will see, but okay. And like, is it in the early 90s or so, it seemed like any Apple product was twice as expensive as the Microsoft thing, but I've been taken advantage of. But are they similar in price, or what's going on? Or don't even worry about that. So, but my 286 with my first word processing program would have been rolling today if
no program and no laptop or no computer is going to last 40 years. So, that's part of it.
That's
so
life.
There are the lowest end Macs are what? How much would a Mac, the lowest end Mac?
$699.
$699.
Really?
They don't compete with the super cheap models, but they have a lot more features than those super cheap models.
And a Chromebook you could get for say $200-$300.
Well, the lowest end Apple computer. Well, it depends on how you define computer. Right. The iPad is $329, and that will run all of Apple's Office Suite, Google's Office Suite, Microsoft's Office Suite.
Because, I mean, I have old letterheads with the artistic design of a company logo, and I'm always afraid it wouldn't, like, convert to a new Apple thing. But I guess so.
The biggest issue is always the fonts. If you used a font that on the old computer that you don't have on the new one. And that doesn't matter Mac or Windows. That same thing happens Windows to Windows. If you use a font on
Linux or
Linux,
but I'll bet you the Mac could probably convert it.
Right, and you have to download that font on that new computer.
Well, hey, guys, when I go in the store, I'm going to have a little more confidence. But, hey, great show. And trust me, you guys are on every weekend at this time?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let some more questions roll in, but I'll be listening. Thank you for the help.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. We're on from noon to 2 every Saturday.
Yep, the longest running computer show in the whole universe.
There you go. Now you're talking. Thanks. Thanks, right. Doug.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we often joke that Microsoft Office existed for Mac before there was a Windows.
That's true. Yeah. The thing you have to remember is that very old operating systems and very old computers just really aren't going to make it. But the fact is that there are a bunch of newer machines that are not expensive. Okay, we'll have Chromebooks in particular, all the way up to low-end Macs. And less money you can take a Chromebook and do a lot of things with it for a couple of $100. You can take a Raspberry Pi for less than $100 and do a whole lot of things with it. Or you can spend a couple of $100 on a low-end laptop or a few $100 on a low-end Mac. And the higher up you go and the more you pay, the less you have to do to get it to run.
Yeah.
Basically the trade-off you're making.
Yeah, we will sometimes say that it's the difference between a Yugo, a Chevy, and a Mercedes.
Right.
Yeah, they both will drive down the road, but one of them you might have a little more comfort doing.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Penny from Rochester, New York. Hi, what's up?
Hi. I have a quick question regarding my Lenovo IdeaPad S340 I have acquired just recently, and I didn't realize it will be all Microsoft. So it says something that I can change it, that I can install some other products too, but I really like Google Photos and lots of, like Chrome, etc. So what do you suggest? Shall I go for it and go ahead with the conversion instructions so I can install other than Microsoft products, or am I going to ruin it? I mean, it didn't cost me anything. Somebody gave it to me as a present, and I think it's last year's version. But anyway, I took it out of the box, so it was only when I received it. So I think it's something to do with this letter S there, that I should be able to convert something. But I just thought before I do anything or I mess it up, I call you guys.
You can always install Google Chrome itself and then don't run anything else. Then it will act as a Chromebook with Chrome operating system and Chrome apps. But there should be a way to download a Linux distro and erase the drive and reinstall and install Linux.
Right. There are a number. Right. As Steve said, there are a number of choices. If all you're really looking to do is to avoid as much Windows Microsoft stuff as possible, you can download and install the Chrome browser and then use the Google Suite. It's got word processing and spreadsheets and databases and everything else. And the only Microsoft you'd be running is the operating system. That's the least intrusive way to make the change.
Okay. So I'm sorry. What did you say again? What should I download?
The Chrome browser from Google.
Okay.
You're still running the Windows OS, but now you're running Google's browser. And you can also now log on – to Google Drive.
Yeah.
And from Google Drive, you can run their word processor and their spreadsheet and their presentation package and do all of that stuff.
How about Google Docs and Google Photos?
Exactly. Exactly.
It'll all be there.
So, okay, so the bottom line is that I have to download Google Browser and then I get basically all the other Google products with it, right?
Right. You can use all those other Google products on Edge as well, which is already built into your system. But if you're looking to get as far away from Microsoft as possible without entirely replacing your whole operating system, that's the way to do it. The
yeah.
other thing is you can put Linux onto your machine, and that would remove Windows entirely. But I would suggest that that's a somewhat larger project.
By the way, would Linux automatically attach itself to Google Photos?
No, again, you would do that through the Chrome browser.
Could they?
Any browser.
Could you do Neverware and turn it into a Chromebook?
She could do Neverware.
Neverware. I have used Neverware before. Thank you for you guys. I have used it. I have converted my previous computer, but anyway, it's bad now too. So, and I'm familiar with Neverword. I just noticed, would it be possible that Linux automatically attached itself to Google Photos? Because I, having been to one of my computers, I went back again, and then all of a sudden I said, Linux, you haven't used Linux in 3 months. And I said, when did I attach it at all? And it was there. Or did I do something maybe by mistake and it attached itself?
I don't know. I'm afraid yeah. I don't.
Without seeing it.
Without yeah. seeing it, we wouldn't know.
All right. Anyway, so what you're saying is that I'm not going to damage my Lenovo because I am going to install Chrome browser and all its products. So that's what you're saying.
Right. It's very hard to damage it with software to begin with, but certainly loading a different browser is not something that will damage your machine.
Okay, when I first opened it, I distinctly remember reading something that it's the S. It said something, but like I said, I didn't read it through. I just looked at it that it said something that to do with the S.
Well,
and gives me the instruction how to remove it and therefore.
Oh, that might be Windows 10S, which was a simplified, stripped down version of Windows that you can only download apps from the App Store, from the Microsoft App Store. I don't know if Chrome is available in the Microsoft App Store.
I don't know that.
You'd have to switch from Windows 10S to Windows 10.
Yeah, if it sends something that it actually would give me the instructions how to remove quote unquote the S in order to allow and install other products, but it kind of gives me a big warning that if I do that, then blah 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 blah. You know, so in other words, obviously they just want to protect their Microsoft products. So that's the only one I use.
Right. Kind of the point of it was that the apps that are in the Windows Store are vetted. And so they're less likely to contain viruses and safer to download. So that was the intent of the S model is that it was harder to get infected.
And in fact, you can only, under S, you can only install apps from the Microsoft Store, and Chrome browser is not in the Microsoft Store. But as we said, you can still go to drive.google.com with the Edge browser that is in Windows 10S. And you can still do all of those things in the Google Drive that you would want to do just using Microsoft browser. And that is, in fact, the easiest way to do it. All of those files now live up in the Google Drive. You don't have to – they don't live on your laptop. They live up in the cloud and Google's cloud. So if you ever change from the laptop that you now have with Windows 10S – to a different laptop, you just log back into Google Drive on the new one, and you've still got all your data. You don't have to worry about a thing.
Okay, just to make sure I understood you clearly. So instead of going through the instruction about removing the app and then trying to get the Chrome browser installed, I can go to Edge.
Yes.
From Edge, I can actually install the Chrome browser since it's on all products.
No, instead of using the Chrome browser, you would use Edge, but Edge will also let you go to drive.google.com.
And photos.google.com and all the other Google web services.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to use Edge instead of the Chrome browser, but Edge will let me into the all the other Chrome products, Google products I would be using, like the Photos and the Docs and the Drive.
Exactly.
Great. Okay, that sounds so much easier. And so this way Microsoft part is quote-unquote still protected, but right. I am using through Microsoft the Google products.
Right, all you're using Microsoft for is to get to the Google Cloud.
Yeah, exactly. So Edge is basically my replacement for the time being or whatever for the Chrome browser.
Exactly.
Got it. Thank you. You guys are great, and you have done your good deed for the day, and you can go home now.
Thank you so much. We will in just a few minutes.
We're about to.
Yeah.
Thank you, and I'm so sorry I took up so much your time.
No, it's our pleasure. Thank you, Penny. Bye-bye.
So it looks like in December of 2017, Google did release a Chrome in the Microsoft App Store. And Microsoft immediately removed it for violating Microsoft policies.
Which are it the heck with Google.
Basically.
Yeah.
All right. We did have one in for you.
Oh, yeah?
From Art. It says, you guys are geeks. Build your own camera system. Yeah. Use it a Pi and the monitor package.
I've got all of
that. Our motion package.
I've got all of that. I just don't have a really good camera for it yet.
This is intriguing. So they removed it because Google used its own rendering engine and not Microsoft's rendering engine.
Right.
But now Microsoft uses Chromium.
Right.
So I bet Google could resubmit Chrome
to the
App
Store. Yeah, I'm sure
they'll
find some other reason.
Yeah.
But Art is exactly right. I have a Raspberry Pi 3 that I am currently not using for anything else. I could attach a camera to that. There's a program called Motion.
Yep.
And actually, there's a half a dozen programs that would let me do that. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. You know how you have a list?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of things on that list. New stuff gets added to that list, and not everything gets done on that list.
Well, let's put it this way. There's your list, and then there's the wife's list.
That everything gets done on that list.
The wife's list has to come before your list. So when you only have so much time, you know, after you do the wife's list, there's your little list that's not that important.
Yeah, I haven't done any 3D printing that wasn't for her in, I don't know, months. a lot of stuff for the market, a lot of stuff for her in general, and we've been building wasp traps. There are a lot of wasps around, and you create a little funnel thing that fits on a particular kind of cup, and they can crawl in, but they can't crawl out. And they're wasps, not bees. Yep. They look like bees. They're the
those little yellow, the mud daubers?
Something like that, but they're nasty little buggers, and they sting constantly.
Yeah, they hurt. Well, bees are like a solid body, whereas wasps look like they've got, two separate bodies, and there's just this little joint in the middle.
Their thorax and their abdomen.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. We went to a outdoor restaurant a couple of weeks ago after seeing the movies, and we all got soda, typical, and suddenly we were surrounded by these little yellow wasps.
Yellow jackets.
And they started crawling down. We tried waving them away, and more were coming. And poor Matthew, they started crawling down into his straw.
Mm-hmm.
So he just set that over on the side. I'm not going to touch that again. And so then the waitress brought us to-go cups with lids, but they still had straws that started crawling down inside.
Yeah, those yellow jackets are nasty. Yeah. They can bite you.
And they were telling everyone where the sugar was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
All right, that's it. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions this week. Really a couple of challengers. We like that. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't forget to join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Go to soundbites.org/lounge, refresh it at 9 p.m., and you will see a link to the lounge meeting. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported. Jazz 90.1. It's you people who keep us on the air, and we are grateful. Be good to one another, will you? We'll see you in just 166 hours.